It's the Paul Patterson and Tom Scalin podcast show. They're talking the walk and not about sloppy joes. So, talk and walk show.
Welcome back to Talking the Walk. This is episode 88. Chris Weber. I am Paul Patterson. We have a few guests on with us tonight. If you guys want to introduce yourselves, that'd be great.
All right. I thought that was a dramatic pause.
I did too.
Well, it ended up being coming. Yeah, your introduction. Wormer, your turn.
All right, I'm Steve Wormskirk. I teach at the high school and coach a few sports in boys and girls golf and eighth grade girls basketball at the current moment.
Okay, that's a good start. We'll get back to both of our guests here in just a little bit. Thank you to Jake Brown and the original music, Bailey Bishop and the original artwork, Cole Hopkins on social media, Joe Martin as our resident fact checker, and then, of course, Jeff Graby on marketing. So I know that you all are very interested in what February's challenge is for my watch. And, of course, it is get 25 15-minute workouts in the month of February taken care of. And so we are 9 days in, and I have 9 days taken care of. So that's awesome. Good piece of it. All right. Are you two ready for the question of the night?
Fire away.
Okay. You've got a picture with me. Both of you have a desk in a room. You can say it's an office, you can say it's a classroom, whatever you want to classify the room as, it's up to you. But you have a desk. That desk is on the opposite side of the room of the entrance to that room. You, as you sit at the desk, face the entrance. Okay? You got that picture in your head with me.
It's exactly my room. Go ahead.
Which way are the pictures on your desk facing? Are they facing you, or are they facing the people who come in to the room?
Well, I'll take that one. I have all my pictures face me, except the ones of that are family members, and then like kids or other things that are from Norwalk related, would be basketball or golf. They face outward.
Okay. Really? Chris, what do you got?
They're facing me.
Okay.
I think, yeah. But I like what Worm said. I mean, I think I appreciate that. Like, I get where you're coming from. My initial instinct was, well, they'd face me so I could look at them.
Okay. Well, I'm curious as to what other people have that are out there in the world. You know, which way do you have things going? Just from the standpoint that to me is, I don't know, I agree with Hormsky. The ones facing you are the little bit more personal, right? Ones that you want to keep your way. And then the ones that you have facing out, a little bit more open and willing to share those. So I get it. Anyway, that's the question of the day. Which way are your pictures facing on your desk, wherever you have that desk? All right. So next piece, of course, is the confessional for me. I have not had a sugary snack, this is my confessional, since Wednesday, January 18th, when started back into a getting up in the morning and doing a little routine. So that was it's been a good 2 weeks for me when it comes to that. You two want to hop in the confessional, or are we going to move right on to feedback?
Well, I think
I have nothing to confess.
I think for me, I in January and well, really started in December, early December, late November, I decided to grow my hair out one last time to see if I could, you know, get back to the 80s. And it just turns out that gray hair doesn't really grow. So it became a pile of mess. And so I'm just done. It's over. I have conceded. And either I go with the transplant for $8,000, which my wife doesn't seem to agree with, or I just stick with the little bit of hair that I have.
So when did you, like,
Well, I mean,
how many weeks in did you go?
I went pretty much, I mean, I think it was November I started even. So I went like at least eight, nine weeks. I just kept letting it grow. Okay. I got it trimmed one time thinking maybe that new follicles will come up. There was nothing that worked out. And it just kept looking worse and worse. And finally, I said to my wife, I said, what do you think of me? She goes, you look awful. And I'm like, I just got to shave again. I got to shave. I got to cut my hair, you know, put a little mousse in it to kind of like it look more than I have. And we're just going to roll with it. So that's it. It's over, okay. Right? The 80s is over. It's over. I can't get back. So that's
it. Has been for a little while.
Well, for everybody else, except for me. So that's my confession.
Okay. I like it. Thank you for jumping in. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
So we're going to hop right into feedback. This is coming from Brad Criswell. Remember last episode we had Tom Scallon kind of went off on socks. So socks, very simple, like socks going to piles in the sock drawer. And then as far as, you know, cold season, are you a wiper, a blower, or a sniffer? And he is a blower. Outside on the farm, he does a good old fashioned farmer blow, which is, you know, very appropriate. Superintendent of Earlham School, Steve Castor. This one's from him. I had a student in my office, so I made him listen to episode 87 while sitting here. Pretty sure it was life-changing listen for him. Brock Sweckel was a blast from the past name for him. There is a potential for full sock episode. Scallon clearly has some deep scars that he needs to get worked out, so why not work them out on the air? I am a sniff twice and then blow. That tolerance is much less for when my kids are sniffing. They might get one sniff before I hand them the box of Kleenex or tell them to go blow their nose. Having a routine you stick with is much different than being resistant to change. I agree with Scallon. It's a totally different conversation if you didn't have a reflective practices or closed off to any feedback. So that is from Steve Castor. And then the next one is from Schmitz. He is clarifying. Scallon questioned whether or not Schmitz's memory was accurate that Maddox Borchardt Johnson was our first four-time Little Hawkeye Conference champion, wrestling champion. And Brad Horton broke his arm in his sophomore year and missed the rest of the season. He was a three-time conference champ. And then Grant Harbor got beat by 1 point his senior season to be the first four-time champ. And so Maddox ended up taking care of that piece of it. And then Brock Sweckel, socks, pretty much fold them into each other and ball them up about halfway. My socks are all the calf high Nike ones. Cold season, I sniff until I can't anymore. I hate blowing my nose because some of it always ends up in my facial hair. And then I have to clean that. It's generally not an enjoyable experience. I think the purpose behind change has to be compelling. Like discussed, if it is just change for the sake of change, I hate that. I also liked your comment one episode ago of measuring success failure. How do you know if it worked and what plans can be put into place if it isn't working? All should be considered before just diving into change and trying to fix things later. And then Dennis Barra, of course, is back. And he had a very long text and was not very appreciative of Scallon calling him out as far as that goes. Well, I just don't know how to express what I'm feeling right now. I am in a tornado of emotions. So this is from a couple episodes ago. Sun in my eye. Sunglasses and number one go-to. The hand is only in extreme cases of emergency. Agreeing with Dustin when it comes to the visor, that is only for the side. Socks, Scallon might have some issues, but I'm not going down that rabbit hole. Last item to be taken care of when folding clothes, I do my best to match them up, line up the tops of them, and then roll them together, not all the way into a ball, but like one or two rolls. Then they are forcefully thrown into the sock drawer with no regard for organization. Cold season, I sniff all day long until finally I either can't take it anymore or I am having trouble breathing and then blow my nose to get the junk out and feel 100% better and wonder why I didn't do that sooner. Or I will sniff too many times and Robin, that's his wife, yells at him to blow his nose or leave the house. A little extreme if you ask. I mean, what happened to in sickness and in health? He's not a big fan of change, especially if what is being changed has been working just fine. But sometimes I also need to sit back and look at the big picture. And then he loves how the guy who is part-time on the show is questioning whether or not he is the most loyal fan. And then he is back. So that's it for feedback. And unless anybody has anything else, but that's it in a nutshell. And then, of course, now we'll move on to high school sports. And just one more time, recap that girls wrestling is all the way over. And then we'll roll right into boys wrestling. Had Little Hawkeye Conference tournament. We talked about that just a little bit where we placed third. And now what we have, or actually then that Tuesday after the conference tournament, we had our regional team duel in which we took on Indianola, and then the winner of that took on Valley. And we lost to Indianola as a team. And then Indianola lost to Valley. And so Valley wrestled last Saturday in the state team duels. And then this Saturday, we actually not only are participating, but also hosting the regional meet for one of the eight districts in Class 3A. And the biggest change outside of the dual schedule is now they are taking the top three wrestlers in all three classes. And then, of course, in classes 1A and 2A, got rid of sectionals and replaced that with the team duel. And then we are everybody in all of those sites are taking the top three kids for state wrestling. So interesting and an exciting time for state wrestling as we get ready to roll. Girls basketball, we ended up with a big win, almost a blowout win, I guess you could say, from on Tuesday night against the Newton Cardinals. And then we have our final conference game tomorrow night, which is also senior night against Oskaloosa. And then the boys have won 11 in a row, playing really solid basketball right now. And also senior night for them tomorrow night against Oskaloosa. And then girls got paired up first round. Postseason will be against Bondurant Farrar at Bondurant Farrar. And then boys will find out next week who they're paired up with. But after Friday night's conference game, what they'll end up with is a game Tuesday on Valentine's Day against ADM, and then they go to Dowling Catholic next Thursday to finish out their regular season. You two want to add anything to basketball?
Go ahead, Chris.
Warriors are playing well. I think the girls got a nice matchup. They could, they played Indianola really tough the last time. They have want to make some amends against Bondurant from last year, and I think they have a chance to a couple winnable games for them. So it just nice, and the boys are playing fantastic. You know, big game was last night that really played them into an opportunity to be one of the eight number one seeds in the sub-state. So the boys kind of have changed with their rankings, and in 1A and 2A, at least it played out. And that's what they've said their goal is all along. Their top eight teams will be all in separate sub-states. And for us, that's huge because that means you stay away from Waukee Northwest, and Valley in this area, and Indianola, excuse me. So if you can stay away from those four schools, you have a really great chance to make the state tournament.
Yeah, that's new, right, Chris? That's new.
That's new.
That's great then for them.
It was a huge
That's a win. Big incentive.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, when will that come out? Do they have to go all the way through Dowling?
Monday. No. So it'll come out Monday.
Oh, that's awesome.
Kind of a big game if you're a Warrior fan to keep an eye on. I don't know when this will come out, but keep an eye on how Centennial does against Northwest, because Centennial's right now ranked in that top eight. Assuming they lose to Northwest, which is probably likely, I would really be shocked if it wasn't Centennial and Norwalk in the same sub-state and kind of let them duke it out, not to look past, because, they'll be when you're in the 4A tournament, you got to, their first round game could be against a Southeast Polk or Johnston team that doesn't have as many wins, but obviously they play really tough competition.
Yeah. And I was talking the other day about the girls, and you play each team twice in the conference, and in the last, when you play Newton the second time around, it's a litmus test to which way is the program's going, if you look a lot better like they did than the first time they played Newton, then that's just a good sign for the program, and coaches figuring things out and players getting comfortable, and Pearl Brown doing a good job, and Ava Carlson, doing a good job. They got some extra minutes in there. So it's just it's good to see them kind of getting comfortable and rising up a little bit. So that was good.
I think similar with the Oskaloosa game for them on Friday. That's
right. I think it's big that way.
they let it get away down there, and let's see if they can't, you know, that would be a really, with this young team, it'd be a really great way to finish out the year.
Yeah, I agree.
The rankings from the boys' side is new and started with basketball, correct? Isn't that the first year that they tried it?
Yep. So I am on the 3A rankings committee. And so there's two coaches, one like media person, and the three people from the state are on each committee. But then 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A each has two coaches who have coached for years in that division, and a radio outlet guy who has strong ties to that division, radio or newspaper.
So that's how you ended up in 3A and not 4A?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Okay.
And I think it just, I think it also came down to when they were doing it. Justin Ohl is on the 4A and I'm on the 3A. That would just make more sense, you know, to I think they wanted some Central Iowa connections in both of those because there's a lot of teams in 3A and 4A. It's been so much fun. We meet every Sunday night and it's not based on like ranking. It's not a vote or anything like that. It's just a consensus. We give our input and, you know, it's kind of, we just talk our way through. They've said from the start, ultimately they're going to make their own decisions, but they ask for our input in order to do that. And it's really been fun. It's been fun for me to get out and go see some different teams play and get into some different conferences. And I don't know. I just think it's created a really nice buzz. Obviously the girls have had that for a long time, but it creates some nice buzz throughout a basketball season because it just, you know, it's fun to get ranked, and then it's fun to see if you can hold on to the ranking, and it adds a lot of good excitement.
Well, I think the biggest benefits, you know, number one, you've got multiple people and they aren't the same people that are working in each of the different classes, because if I'm not mistaken, the girls have just one person that sets the rankings for every class. Mm-hmm. Correct. They just sit in the office and do it. Second would be, now that transparency is there, there's no question as to who is what when it comes to the top eight. You know exactly who the number one overall seed is when they get ready to do postseason brackets and all that. I think that's something that helps. And then I really think basketball is setting the table for all the rest of the sports for them to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge step for them. Huge step.
Yeah. And it's positive. Fun. They've been a huge positive. I got to give compliments to the people at the state. They have been really fun to work with and really open-minded. They have some new guys in there that's really been a passion of theirs, and some of their old guys, you know, let's give them credit too for listening to some things that they need to get better at too, which sometimes is the hardest thing. Right. And
yep.
So I think it's great. And you know what I really like is, so I was talking to a coach last week who was kind of stomping and saying, we're playing really well. And this, it's great. You want to get into that top eight. Everybody else, you still have your chance, but you're going to have to play your way to where you want to get to. And that's what I think it should be in a basketball tournament. No different than like the NCAA tournament or any, like I said, any sport. But like, if you have six or seven losses throughout the year, well, and you're playing really well now, that's great. It doesn't mean you're going to be ranked. You still have a chance. You just got to go win the games, right? I don't think the goal should be to have the eight ranked teams make the state tournament. They just get the luxury of not having one of the other top teams with them. But that's what,
and that's the number not the one way that it used to
always
be.
Make the final four, you know?
Right, right. But that isn't the way they used to do it.
Right. That's what I'm saying. And so it was more if you were next. So this year in 2A, there's a strong possibility there's going to be three teams from Northwest Iowa that come down to the state tournament. And they all get, because they're all in different substates. And in the past, two of those three have always been in the same substate. And I think it's great. I think that they are up there, their 2A basketball is very deserving of getting three teams down here. If they go on it.
Sure. Sure. I mean, they still have to win a game. My next question, are all three of the members of the association on each of the four ranking committees?
Yes.
Are those guys all consistent?
Yeah. Yep. Those guys are, you know, and they just kind of collaborate to, so it'd be no different than what you were saying with the girls. I'm sure they collaborate, but the difference is they ask for our input before they do their final rankings.
Yeah. So they have a 1A meeting, and then that same, those same three guys, different group that they meet with, but then go 2A, 3A, 4A for the night and then get it. Okay. I just, I don't know. I like the change.
Yep. I bet you baseball is not far behind.
Right. That they are planning on doing that.
Yeah.
And they're going to do it for football too.
Love it. Love it.
And really the only, it's the classes in football that don't have the RPI that are the ones that need it. So you have a better understanding of why you got paired up with somebody in the playoffs.
Now what is fun about ours though, is, you know, we have BC Moore, which a lot of people use as that metric, which is kind of similar to the RPI, but it's kind of fun because that still doesn't always tell the whole story. And what I mean by that is there's been a couple instances, not in my class, but in other classes where a kid has been hurt for like 5 games and a team has swooned. And that's one of the criteria they put into that if, you know, because let's face it, that doesn't help anyone if come tournament time, that kid is back and they're one of the top 3 teams in the state. You don't want to put them with another team who's a top 5 team because it's not, at some point, it's not fair to the other, you know what I mean? The team that maybe ran the course in the season.
Who's the kid from Council Bluffs last year?
Yeah, Josh Dix.
Yeah, got hurt.
Which kind of is the same thing, right? They were way up there, but they would have, if it was like this year, they would have probably fallen out of that just because they lost him. But they weren't the same team, obviously, without, I mean, you look how good he's playing for Iowa. They're not.
Or Kingery.
Yeah, right. And so
Kingery missed that however many games.
Yep. That was also taken into consideration.
So, a huge positive. Bowling, again, I don't see very many results on the bowling, and I'm not sure why that is. And then state swimming, you know, they had their qualifying meet, and Norwalk specifically did not have anybody that made that. And then I think the only one from the Lincoln Des Moines or the Des Moines Lincoln swim team was actually a kid from Carlisle that made the state tournament. So that's coming up also this week.
We actually just had the bowlers at Lakewood. And so I know that their conference meet for girls is tomorrow. Conference meet for boys is Saturday. And then sub-states for each of them is I think girls is Monday and boys is Tuesday.
Excellent. And I'm glad you knew that because
let me just quiz you guys. What do you think? So Emerson Fells has the highest score. Do you anybody know Emerson? He's a fun kid. He has the highest score of anybody so far this year. What do you think his score was? His high score.
286.
290. Man, it's 276, but I thought that was amazing. You guys must be better bowlers than me.
Well,
that's good, huh?
I gotta be fair. If it was, I don't know, if it's 300, we'd hear about it, right? That'd be a big
right. But so, 276 is
that's one good. Of
the, and Julia Palin, had the highest girl score, and I think she was like 187, which is still very good.
So there is a young man that so I went to school with somebody from Cascade, got to know his buddy Ben Dolphin, who lives in Cedar Rapids, and Ben's son goes to Cedar Rapids Kennedy, and I think he has now bowled 300 games, I think, and so that's why I guess 290, just because it's possible to be up there.
Have you ever had a golfer shoot a hole in one, Worm?
How many hole-in-ones?
Yeah.
One or two? What are you talking?
Like, no. Have you had, in a meet, a golfer get a hole-in-one?
That was Harper Gillis this year in the JV meet.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, over at Sugar Creek there in Waukee. He won the meet, and he eagled the last hole on number 9.
Is that your only one ever?
That's in a tournament, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done it twice in front of the kids, but that's, you know.
That's boring. That's just,
That's back at Rolling Hills, you know, where they're all par threes out there and you can dunk them in from everywhere. So.
Some of us.
Well, yeah, I have, not that I've golfed as much as you, but there's, I've never had a hole in one. So I, you acting like it happens frequently.
Well, that's just being a little cocky, though. So.
Yeah. Well, you are better than the average golfer. So now, Worm, you got to hop into Criswell's corner. So the story behind this is Brad Criswell does not like it when we don't know much about the guests. And Chris, being a return guest, doesn't have to hop in Criswell's corner. So Brad just basically wants to know a little bit about you, you know, maybe where you grew up, how you ended up in Norwalk, how many years you've been in Norwalk, you know, just a little brief history of Steve Wormskirchen.
Let's see. I grew up in Minnesota. Lost the accent a little bit. Northern Minnesota. And they cut junior high baseball. I was a big baseball guy. They cut it in middle school. They cut the junior high baseball program, seventh grade. So looking for something to do. So I went out for golf and kind of fell in love with it. It was kind of a my personality kind of sport. You know, try to accomplish things and, you know, how many strokes can I get it, you know, around in nine holes. It was that kind of a challenge was always appealing to me just as a little kid. So I enjoyed that and just kind of took off from there. The golf coach from Central College at that time, Norm Ryerson, his mom actually lived in Osage, Minnesota, which is like 6 miles from me. And she clipped out some newspaper clippings and sent them down. And he called me in some January day and said, would you like to come to Central College? And in Pella, Iowa. And I said, I know where Iowa is, but I don't know where Pella is. And so I said, well, I'd be very interested to play some golf. And he kind of set it up. And he said, he kind of sent me the information and all that. And I filled it all out. And of course, you know, it was a whopping $8,900. So that was way too much holy money cow. For me to go back then. And so I told him, I said, well, I can't afford, you know, what it was after, you know, the scholarships and those kind of things and aids and stuff. And he says, well, I think I can get you a scholarship. This is Division III, how that works, right? You know that. So I think I can get you a scholarship. So he fills out some paperwork and I got the scholarship and ended up going down to Central and met a Dutch girl and stayed in Iowa since then. Top 1 year Colfax Mingle, 4 at Murray, Iowa. I had enjoyed my time down there in Murray, a small town, 1A schools. And 1997 came to Norwalk and has been here ever since. So that's, you know, 27 years we're working on, 28, somewhere in there. And that's
it. So was your first class the graduating class of 1998 or 1997?
97.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was the Superman and Aquaman class.
Okay. So the year before Chris and I came.
Right.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
Kevin Boyce and you, I think, came in.
Yes.
Boyce and I came in together. That's right. And, you know, sad to see Kevin leave and all that. So, because he would always, he and I go up there and get the plaques together and stuff. And that was always fun.
Yeah.
We've got now that going on now.
Now I'm alone. Although I think maybe somebody else comes in with me. I can't remember who it was.
Well, we'll find out in 3 years.
That's right.
Who it is.
But you know, I've coached girls golf now for 3 years, boys golf for all 27. I was Coach Walker's assistant basketball coach for 13 years, head coach for the girls for 6. And then junior high, I had to think about how many years. I've been junior high now, 8th grade girls for 4 years.
Okay.
So that's my coaching tenure at the...
You rotated because you missed out, right? You like, because 1 year you had like a shift on at 8th grade.
Well, I watched Ellie. I watched Ellie. So I quit.
Why it was? Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
I did the 8th grade. And once I got out of the varsity, I did the 8th grade with Ellie. And then I watched her all the way through.
High school. Got it.
Yep.
So you, if I'm not mistaken, you are the longest tenured head coach at Norwalk right now.
That's correct. That's right.
Yeah. At 27.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or 8 or whatever. I don't know what it is. It's hard to do the math on that. You add 1 at the end. How do you do that? the track and add one, I think it is. It's always missed on the ACT.
24, 25, 26, 27. So yeah, you're finishing what, your 27th year? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's right.
That's got to be. Okay. thanks for joining us on Criswell's Corner. So now what we've got is we've got, why is this called Chris Webber? Well, Chris Webber is pretty, is it infamous? Would that be the right term? He is infamous for his 1993 national championship in basketball timeout, in which they had no more timeouts. So that's the reason why. And we're going to start talking about timeouts. So we're going to do a little Pulp Fiction for you. we're going to go end and then the middle, and then we're going to go to the beginning, and then we're going to talk timeouts here for just a little bit. So the end comes from when the Buffalo Bills were playing the Cincinnati Bengals here in the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. The head coach of the Buffalo Bills decided to start calling timeouts in the fourth quarter, down three scores with 7:53 left. And I thought that was maybe a little too early. And maybe just, I don't know, for me, you know, an armchair quarterback, thinking that it was a little strange that he started that early before he figured out what was going to happen on that possession defensively. And then could they score to get it to two scores and then maybe start thinking about timeouts. And then it got me back to, which is now the middle. For years, I heard Chris Larsen talk to me all the time about how football staffs needed to have a basketball coach on their staff simply for game day to take timeouts and advise when to take a timeout versus when not to take a timeout. So then that's when I went to Chris and said, hey, will you hop on and do an episode with us and start talking about timeouts with how everything shook out? And he said, well, if you're going to have me on to do timeouts, then you got to have Worm, because I can't remember who started. And so now this is, I'm passing the ball to you two to have the conversation about who actually started the conversation about a basketball coach joining the football staff when it comes to timeout, so that you can prep us all about why this episode is happening.
What, you know, Lars, I remember us talking about it when you co-taught with me. I mean, that's what I first remember.
That's when I was referring to, is, you know, that was back in the early 2000s where we were having these discussions, because we would come in on Mondays. We were a co-teacher, and we would come in and we'd rehash how often in the NFL. And I will tell you, it's gotten better, but there's still, you can see the coaches who do it well and the coaches who don't. And we just talked about how much mismanagement there are. Like, and what I remember of our conversation, this was 20 years ago, probably. And so see if you agree with me, Worm, that I remember just saying, I think football coaches, they're so grounded in the tough, you know, stuff of things. And again, remember, this is 20 years ago. And so I think it was, and you know, they're worried about blocking and tackling and all of this. And I said, but so much of the game comes down to the last 4 minutes, and half of them have no idea how to manage a clock. You remember?
Yeah, it's exactly what we talked. It was exactly what we talked about. We talked about the emotion part of football is tough, because you're kind of out there with your players and you're living the tackles and the hits and the ebbs and flows of a football game and emotion is a huge part of the game. So, you know, you need that guy that's not tied to that. You know, I remember Coach Walker, you know, when he would sit down, you know, whether it be Mr. Huff or I, we would be talking to him, he'd kind of chirping, you know, about this, that, or the other, and he'd get up, it'd be too much, you know, it'd be too much. Or he'd want to go stand somewhere else and think, because he wanted to process that, you know. And basketball is a little easier to do that, because you can kind of process that and think about those things, and emotion's not as big a part of it. You can be almost strategically going at things as from a basketball standpoint rather than the emotional standpoint.
Yeah, and I've said the same thing. Like, basketball, it just is such a big part of the game. Like, the use of timeouts. And so I think it's something there's naturally basketball coaches think of more, because that strategic nature of, like, I just think it's more evident in basketball. Now, I will tell you, like I said, in the last 20 years, I think it's grown a lot in football, like with analytics. And I think people do think about you know, their timeouts they're using and how it works with the 2-minute warning and the clock stopping with passing downs and all that. But there was a long time where I think that was just kind of an afterthought. Whereas I think in basketball, it's always kind of been part of the allure of coaches or the.
Well, I don't know about NFL stats, but you know darn well they've got the sheet that says, when do you go for two? When do you go for one? Mm-hmm. Those same guys 100%. That are in charge of that, they've got to be now in charge of, okay, no, I was just doing the math here. And so in the NFL game, once it gets below 2 minutes mathematically, and if, you know, if they've got the, you know, with the 40-second clock that they run and how much time it takes, you get underneath 2 minutes and the game's over. They can't do it with the timeouts anymore. You're gonna win that ball game. If it's over 2 minutes, then with the 2-minute warning, they're gonna get one at least one last shot. So, and I'm sure they have it all broken down, right? I'm sure it's part of the game now. It's got to be.
Well, I know Worm and I have talked about this, and Paul, I can't remember if we've talked about it or not, but you know, that's why you'll see it now where a lot of guys second and one and there's 2 minutes, 50 seconds left, let's say, and they just jump off sides to give them the first down because they know the only chance they're going to get is to, let's say it's second and one and you have all three of your timeouts left, but it was just at the 2-minute warning. They'll come out. I know like Vrabel does it all the time. John Harbaugh does it all the time. So they'll jump off sides to give them first down. Sure. Now, it was interesting. So Brian Luft, who is another guy who this conversation has kind of been triangulated through with Worm, is so this year, though, I saw it, I think it was the Titans were playing. It might have been the Titans and the Ravens. I can't remember. They jump off sides and they decline the penalty.
Smart.
Smart. What I find amazing is the announcers are sitting there just perplexed because they have no clue. But it was really smart to decline the penalty because the chances of you getting 1 yard, in which case then you get a fresh set of downs. But that actually, you know, it all is in these 40-second increments. And that's why people don't understand, like, if you have 4th and 7 and you have all three of your timeouts left, so let's say you have 4th and 7, all three timeouts and 1:12 left, let's just say. And people are like, oh, they got to call a timeout to make the perfect play. I'm sitting there yelling, no, go for it. And if you don't, you can use all three of your timeouts. Once you, all that math that goes into it, right? Because if you use a timeout, then the game's over if you don't get it. And so I think especially keep it, I'm sure somebody thought of that's why you get three timeouts because there's three downs and you can actually save a possession.
To me, that is the, I think that's the biggest piece of that is the, you got to have somebody that's good at math on there. And there is no doubt every single football staff has the go for two, don't go for two, you know, based on the score. Mm-hmm. At some point in time, that same thing is going to be out there for if you have the 40-second play clock, which they all do now. Yep, this is when you can kneel on it with one timeout. This is when you can kneel on it with two timeouts. This is when you can kneel on it with three timeouts. You know, all of that eventually will be there. So I guess my question is, does it change timeout wise from sport to sport? You know, and really it's only basketball and football that we're talking about. Is clock management different in basketball than it is in football? Because you are limited to just the 5 timeouts for basketball as opposed to 3 and 3 when it comes to football.
I think absolutely. I mean, a couple things now. And you know, the other thing, have you guys noticed like in NFL and college, now do you see how many teams like are using their timeouts on defense to try, because now teams can move the ball down the field to field goal range like in 30 seconds, right? And so they try and use their timeouts on defense, but then the offensive guys try and like burn the clock so that it all becomes that end of half scoring. And then if you can double dip and score at the end of the half. Now, I think in basketball, that's the one thing you really try and do with quarters is you try and double dip as much as you possibly can and get those extra possessions. I always felt high school basketball is so different than college basketball because in college, the clock stops after a make. if you score under a minute left, the clock stops. In high school, it doesn't.
In the second half.
Right, only in the second half. But I always felt it was so big to keep all those timeouts. I valued them because think how many extra possessions you can get. You guys might remember this. That's how we won our state title. They scored with about 6 seconds left. The ball bounced around. Fortunately, Bowen and Scott Anderson are out there. Tyler Johnson, everyone on the TV was crediting him, and he got in the locker room. He's like, I had no idea why they were doing that. So I can pick on that. But so in basketball, high school wise, if you can save those timeouts till the end of the game, and obviously you gotta get there too, right? But it's a huge difference because we've used to keep track of that on the bench. Because I'd always want to know how many timeouts does the other team have left. If I'm winning by five, because it hit a certain thing, and I'm like, hey, we got this one. They have no timeouts left, and we're up two possessions or whatever. There is no way you guys can really lose this game, because even if they score, just let it bounce around.
Yeah, is it
different now with the shot clock in high school?
And yes, to some extent, but still, I still think you want to have those timeouts to be able to call. I'd want at least two saved, if possible, for that situation under a minute left. Warren, what do you think?
Okay.
Well, it's interesting because Coach Walker, he was always big on saving the timeouts. He wanted the timeouts. And one of the things he talked about was that, sometimes when teams would get on a roll, and of course he had really good teams, right? So he kind of trusted that those kids would settle down on their own. But I thought it was always interesting. His philosophy was that he never wanted to show that the other team, give them any kind of advantage. So he would try to play through runs that the other team would have, And so, sometimes I suggest, let's call a different defense, or maybe, if you were going to stick with that group and not call timeout, he wants to stay with him. I said, well, let's switch defenses. Let's maybe get a something charged up there, or, let's run interchange or something to get an easy bucket to squell their, squell their run. But he liked to save them. Me, on the other hand, when I was the head coach, to me, if I could save a turnover from happening and save one possession, two possessions, three, five possessions, I'd use them all in the first half. I save five possessions. Because if I felt like if I save five possessions and I score on all five and that gives them five less, that 10 points might be the ball game right there. In a lot of my games, it was always that close. I thought it was important that way to save, if it's tied up in the corner, I'm like, she is throwing that away. I'm like, that's going to lead to a turnover and a layup. I'm calling timeout. So I would try to save it.
But I think that was the difference between football and basketball a little bit. Basketball, some of it depends on the team you have and how much talent you have too, because I know I've had young teams before where I'm like, I'm calling timeout right away. Like if we get in any trouble, I'm not going to let them get on any more than two basket run, and you've done that. But then you've had experienced teams too, where you're like, yeah, we're going to let them play it out, because I think it's a luxury, right? But I'm sure I hear where you're coming from, but I'm sure you'd also love to have two or three left for the end of the game if you were down too, if possible.
Sure. I guess
but I
was
think
always,
it all
yeah.
depends on what you have.
Yeah, I think that's right. So that's a little different.
I would tell you from a football side, first half, I am a lot more loose with timeouts. Ooh. I'll call a timeout, go chew somebody out, and then turn around and walk right off the field. Because they didn't line up right or whatever. But the second half, we may take a delay penalty just to save that timeout.
Because you want all three.
Yeah. Correct. You want as many as you can have rolling into that final 4 minutes in case you need them to stop the clock. So
I just think they're so valuable in football. And keeping all three is so important. I think in particular pros, at least keeping two, so that plus the 2 minute warning, right. It's a possession. If you think about it, I mean, that is, and then normally, you're seeing a lot more teams. I love this. Like the person who's on offense, Andy Reid does it all the time of not saying, oh, we're just going to pound it in there so you can call timeout three times in a row either, though. Like, he's like, no, you're going to have to stop Patrick Mahomes if you want the ball back.
Right, right. In addition to trying to figure out whether or not it's going to be a pass or a run and,
exactly.
and get yeah. it all stopped. So how many, on average, how many possessions are there in a high school basketball game? Do you know the answer to that?
Well, I think about, I bet you on average between 60 and 70, depending on the pace of the game.
That's, I was going to say 60. It's usually 15 a okay. quarter back in the day.
That's what I was thinking too. I was thinking 30 a half.
Yep.
Okay.
But we always, we are kind of played slow. So, I mean, there's probably teams that are more.
Football wise, you are somewhere in between that 7 to 10 possessions a game range, you know, depending on, I mean, if you go three and out, a little different, but typically you're somewhere in between 7 to 10. So that possession in football, even more important than, you know, the basketball when it comes to that, just from a percentage standpoint.
Yeah,
so,
no doubt.
Anyway, okay.
So here's so important. Yeah.
Oh, huge.
Right.
Huge. Cause you just lost your possession.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who do you think basketball wise was the master of end of game or end of half clock management? Doesn't matter any level.
I can tell you right now, I Googled that question.
Okay, and, what do you got?
And nothing came up. There is no master out there. There is nothing. I've worded it six different ways, and I couldn't find out who was the top timeout king. There was nothing.
Well, what do you
know? I just off the cuff, when you put that out there, somebody who's always stuck out to me is Tom Izzo. They're always okay. very consistent. They always go right to in front of him. They call timeout, and he has plays that he runs from the sideline right to the spot that he wants to get to. And, you know, he was always very good at that. You know, Paul, you'll like this one. Bo Ryan, I thought that was one of his real strengths, was his game management. Like, he was sure. really good at that kind of stuff.
Well, you
I'm sure there's others I'm not about. Thinking of, but.
In all honesty, it's got to be the people that are consistently winning one possession games.
Right. Jay Wright, I would say, just sure. kind of pops into my head.
Can you think of anybody? Who did you play against that or coach against that was really good at it?
I mean, I just felt like our little Hawkeye conference when I was there was so good. You know, Coach Hessing, Coach Sharp, Coach Core, Coach Rankin, they're all really good strategic. Like, that was one thing I just – and, like, it used to be a battle to get that last possession because everybody – it was kind of like a little bit of a cat-and-mouse game of who's going to have the guts to hold for one – earliest, because it is such an advantage, because we talked, if you can do that four times in a game, you're getting four extra possessions, and you can
right.
double up. You can hit at the end of the first and maybe get the ball at the end of or to start the second quarter. And so there were just a lot of people in our league that really valued that, you know. And so I felt like that was part of the fun I had coaching, was because I had some really good peers that challenged me so much, and they were, you know, everybody, all those guys were doing it at a state level too.
And little fun fact for you from Norwalk football, every single year that Bo Livingston was on staff, he was our timeout guy.
Yeah.
That's late in the game.
He's a really cerebral, like he thinks that kind of, you know, way.
Yeah. But Bo, do we need a timeout here? Nope. Let's hold on. Let's wait and see what happens. Bo, do we need a timeout here? Yes. Okay. Yeah. Timeout. So it was, he was always our go-to guy there.
Any good girls coaches that you felt were really good at that?
Well, you know, you mentioned the guy coaches, and those, some of those guys, but you know, including yourself, coached for a lot of years together. You guys really had battles. Yeah. And I don't remember one time ever reflecting on saying, boy, that coach used the wrong timeout, or that just wasn't played right.
Yeah.
I don't remember thinking that. It was always, everybody seemed to know exactly when and why to call the timeouts. You know, there was never a blunder that way that I thought was bad.
Which one of you two did the DCG game at DCG for the boys?
Larson did. No, I didn't.
Did you
no,
think?
You did.
No,
you did.
Yeah, I was at DCG.
Did you think? Did you think Coach Rankin maybe jumped the gun on using all of his timeouts as early as he did?
I don't know. I mean, they were all like, you know, if you don't have a way to stop it. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, he was stopping the bleeding.
So,
but then he got to the end and he didn't have any timeouts left.
Yeah, right. I mean,
when they went to overtime or even in overtime, he only had the one as opposed to multiple.
But I think that's what Worm was saying too, though. It's hard because sometimes you got to get there too.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between basketball and football. You know, I mean, they're going to score a touchdown in football and you're going to be like, all right, we're going to get the ball back. You know, I mean, I don't feel like you call timeouts in football to stop momentum.
Not unless it is early.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like
third quarter coming out of the half or first quarter starting the game.
Just sometimes in basketball, you don't have a choice because you're like.
Right. So you got to settle it down somehow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought Trent Etzen from Grinnell, I think he does a good job. He calls them all at the right time. And I watch him in the huddle and he's kind of pushing all the right buttons and trying different things.
Math guy.
Yeah, he's a math guy, right? Exactly. That's exactly right.
There you
he's
go.
A math guy. I thought Jim McPartlin, when he coached Boone, the big guy, Jim McPartlin, I thought he did a good job. He beat us a couple times against Walker's teams, you know, when Hildebrand was there and Atherton. And I thought he just, you know, he just hit all the right buttons, called the timeouts, switched things up. He was good that way. So he used timeouts really well, that from Boone, so.
Okay. Well, you two got anything else? Anything final on timeouts?
Well, I thought Pelzer had a fantastic timeout the other night when Carlson was on the bench with the foul trouble and the league got chipped back to around 10-ish, I think it was, and they had a lot of momentum going. And rather than waiting for a dead ball, he called timeout. And not only did he call timeout to get Carlson in, which was kind of an obvious thing, but he set up an exact play for Carlson.
For him and got a layup out of it.
I mean, that was
to me. Yeah, he ran a little
brilliant
variance timeout. Of interchange. Do you see that? Like, they're kind of running it just a touch differently, but.
And I like that angle. Look, the Hawks run that same kind of play where they do that diagonal pass down there. And that's tough to stop.
Because there's no help on the weak side.
You can see things better. Right.
But I think that's the maybe for another day is the using just make sure you effectively use your timeouts. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot in basketball from a basketball standpoint. You just don't want to waste them on, you know, whatever. If you're stopping a run or if you want to get a person into the game or you want to be able to save them for the end, you just want to make sure that you're strategically using them and not emotionally just mad because they scored and you're calling a timeout.
Since we talked about Chris Webber, Larson, do you ever call a sixth timeout?
No, but it's funny you bring that up because get the example that I said. Let's just say, let's think of the end of our state championship game, right? If you're we were up by one, I think, or two. Maybe we were up by two, but let's just say 4 seconds left. You have no timeouts left. Do you go and call timeout? Because I've never been there, but you really should, right?
Right.
Go
you
call
got a chance
timeout.
Then.
Take the technical foul.
Yep.
Maybe you miss a couple free throws. Maybe you steal the inbounds. But as it is, the clock just going to run. Brian always said, you just take the ball and you punt it out of bounds. You grab it out of the net, punt it out of bounds, and the ref will blow his whistle and be like, delay a game, like, and then you're like, yep, that's a warning. Let's play.
What about, I saw this the other night, and it was not intentional by the Warriors, but the water bottle fell on the floor and water got on the floor. And I said it on the YouTube. I'm like, you know, I've never thought about that. And it's not actually ethical, but you could just say to the ref at any time, whoa, sir, there's water on the floor. oh, okay, well, wipe that up. And in the meantime, you've got three plays drawn up and you stop momentum. And that's right. That's the equivalent to
this weekend. Somebody like spiked a water bottle and it got like accidentally.
Yeah.
Kind of, but it flew out onto the court.
You gotta stop the game.
Not a bad idea.
Gotta stop the
faking
game.
Injuries in football. That's become popular. Yeah,
you see that in football where they're yeah.
I mean, you could have one of those, you know, managers right at the end of the bench. He could be in charge of the water ball spilling. That's something that he's in charge of.
Well, the NBA and college is a little different in that they've got those big jugs that are sitting there full of Gatorade or Powerade or whatever. You could just have that tip over.
Tip it over.
That would be a delay. That would be a massive delay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to have a nice play drawn up after that. If you don't have a great play drawn up after that, you've got to be fired as a coach because that's going to take 10 minutes to clean that up.
So think about this, though. How important are timeouts in the end of football games? The NFL has basically had to change all their rules to make sure teams don't cheat it, you know, because you can't fake an injury now. And even if a guy is injured, you got to take the timeout. Like, because that shows how valuable that part of the game is.
That possession. A possession is that valuable.
Yes.
Yeah. For sure. I think the other being able to sit most of the time as close to the bench as I do. I think the interesting thing is how often I can hear that boys staff talk about, okay, if they and just heard Aaron talk about it again on Tuesday, that if they make another bucket here without us scoring, I'm going to take a timeout. And it didn't happen, but at least they had a plan as to when, you know, they were going to do it and the why. So I think that
I'm
other
sure
piece
Warren
of it,
did that for Coach Walker. I love that with my guys, like to give me a, you know, that would be something they'd say to me, hey, if they score again, let's get a timeout. And then just to put it in your head. And so, I love it. I love that when assistant coaches would put that in your head or vice versa. It could have been like you said, it was with Aaron where.
Yeah. He was turning to the bench, talking to those guys at the end.
Yeah.
About it. I just think it is. Yeah. Well, and at least you're having a conversation about it because they are valuable.
If you want to talk about timeouts, I got a small story. Do we have time for that in this podcast?
Heck yeah. Well, okay. Hey, so here's the deal.
Yes.
Worm. I think there are several things that you need to know. Number one, this is a no prep podcast. Number two, it is a no edit podcast. And number three, it could last 4 hours. I mean, I don't know how many people would listen to us if it lasted that long, but it can last as long as we want. So you go ahead and share.
Well, it's a timeout story. So, you know, we're down in Pella. I think this is Van Velzen and Thompson and Paige Lammers senior year. Got a good team, right? We're going down there. And this is the game I think Haley gets hurt at. But before she gets hurt, I go to the officials because I know down there, you know, the boys have got a big game coming up. They're going to pack it down there, right? So, and we're kind of fighting Pella for the number one spot there in the conference. And so I go to the officials. And, you know, pregame, I'm like, hey, you know, and I always order the officials. I'm like, hey, I'm a young coach. I haven't coached much, you know. I just want to know the rules. I said, if I call timeout, it's really loud here. I said, what are the rules on that? You know, how far can I step on the floor? How can I get your attention? And the coach says, the ref says, you come all the way out to half court. I said, oh, okay. I just want to make sure, you know, because it gets pretty loud. He goes, you can come all the way. There's no, if you're calling a timeout, you can come all the way out there. So they're on a run and I call timeout when we've got the ball, you know, and I go all in almost to the center circle and the crowd is like, oh my gosh, you've got to tee him up. And of course I think the official's like, oh, he set me up for that one. The crowd's going nuts. Yeah. There's a little gamemanship, a little showmanship, a little bit. It was kind of fun. That's a little Pelham.
Did you get your timeout? Did you get teed up and did you win?
Lost. Got the timeout. There was no teeing up. No, because I prepped it. Okay. He knew that he couldn't tee me up or anything. And so he just kind of smiled at me and gave me the timeout.
You told me I could do it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. That sounds like kids asking parents for things when it comes to that.
Hey, Warren, right, any was final that Haley on Van Velzen?
What's that?
Is that Haley Van Velzen?
Haley,
or Tori? Hey, Haley, it was really cool. She was just on the Channel 13 news last week. Kind of a nice little shout out.
As a firefighter?
As a firefighter. She is starting some, it was some, she was promoting, and it's her, she has started it, like a kids getting into like firefighting and paramedics. Huh. And so she's doing some form of a school for young kids to get them engaged in the Des Moines school district.
That's pretty cool.
Now, I thought,
about her.
Thought it was great. It was good to see her. She was like actually in the studio talking.
Oh, Kaylin so, Thompson probably got her in there, right? They were
good classmates. Point. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Look at that. A couple of your former players.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That would be skipping ahead. That would be one of our positives right there. I mean, that would be a great positive for us.
Shout out to the former Warriors.
Anything final on timeouts? We good there?
Well, I just want to ask Coach Larson, in terms of your timeouts, did you ever call a timeout that backfired?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you remember?
here's just a funny story, and this wasn't so much but we were playing that Valley against Creston to go to state, the first time we ever went to state, you know, when I was coaching in 2003, and Luke Freeberg was driving, and he dishes, and I call timeout. And he dishes to Micah Loveless, and he knocks down a three. And one of the things, you know this, Worm, from all your years with the girls, it's just funny. As a season goes along, and all of a sudden there's way more people who show up who've been there all year long, and there was some guy about five rows up from me just giving me the business because I called a timeout and ruined, "What are you doing?" And he's yelling at me. And so in that huddle, I was just like, "Hey, guys, don't ever shoot again." When we were honest, we were laughing about it. But yeah, I think I've had a gazillion timeouts. I always hate it because you go back and you're like, "Oh, I wish I would have called a timeout there," or "I wish I wouldn't." Basketball, it is just such a one of my things I loved about it. Basketball is a lot like life, and you know, you gotta be able to put your head on the pillow and know what you did that day was the best you could do. And, you know, you have to give yourself some grace in terms of like your timeouts and stuff, right? Cause it does change the whole game. You were talking about with Coach Pelzer, let's just use as an example. If he doesn't call that timeout, who knows, maybe they get a stop and they come down and hit another three, and then it's a 7-point lead. And then, you know, it changes the course of a whole game. And it is, you know, I'm guessing probably more times than not it worked out in our favor because I think I was pretty reflective about using them. But I hated going back and watching film, and I'd be like, "Gal, if I wouldn't have called a timeout here, what would have happened differently?" But it's just part of coaching basketball, I would say.
I agree. Anything final on timeouts? Okay. We're going to move on to history, and I need both of your help on this one. Do you know how many Little Hawkeye Conference championships Norwalk basketball has, boys and girls?
Well, that South Central, when they played in the South Central, they won, I think, a lot, but I don't have that information.
Did you say Little Hawkeye or just?
Oh, yes, Little Hawkeye.
No, okay.
Little Hawkeye, just Little Hawkeye.
So boys have six.
Okay.
I think.
And the reason I said is from what I understand. Well, I shouldn't say that. They have six from the time like Pella and all those schools joined the Little Hawkeye Conference.
Okay.
I think the girls have six.
Okay. Do you know, I apologize for this, just with the boys taking sole possession of second place on Tuesday night, do you know how many second place? And yes, people do remember second place. Do you know how many second place finishes in the Little Hawkeye Conference there were or are? That one's a little tougher, and I apologize for that.
Well, I know I had one, I think, and I think Coach Martin might have had one. And I know Walker had one because that was a missed shot at the buzzer. You lose the conference title to Knoxville. And that was not a good night. Let's put it that way. So So I know we didn't win the conference title that year. So I know there was a second place there. So I can remember three, but that's all I got.
That's, okay. I'm sure it was about three or four. I know that one time I had that all kind of statted out, but I don't know it anymore.
Okay. Well, that's our history portion. Some little Hawkeye conference basketball talk there. And then we're going to go positive. Obviously the Van Velzen story is a huge one. And then also want to just point out large group speech for us. Tim Clay did a great job getting those kids ready for their competition. And now they're at the state level. And I think one of the things that Tim does a great job of is he comes in before school and he works with kids after school. And I'm guessing just based on the way things go that there are groups that he brings in the morning so that they're not all there at the same time after school. Mm-hmm. Brings groups in the morning and works with them, and then he's got groups after school. But our large group speech did a fantastic job, and we'll be competing here. And I'm not sure when that is, but it's coming up soon for them to be able to compete. So do either of you want to add another positive? You got anything positive that's going on that you know of outside of the Van Velzen story?
No, I liked Kalen Thompson. I mean, that's positive.
Well, I mean, you could throw another one out there. I think your Wednesday morning and then that assembly that you have out at Lakewood is a positive. And then all the kids that get to come out and get, would that be highlighted or spotlighted? I don't know how you want to word that.
I just think it's pretty great. You know, we have like over 140 kids from the high school who come out and volunteer time at somewhere, either through clubs or they come out with their activities or they come out and mentor. We have like 37 kids who are doing that, which I just think that's, I think it's wonderful. I think we have so many great kids. No, I don't know. I think sometimes kids take a bad rap.
That's a good one.
You just hear about them. What's that?
That's a good one. I think that's a great positive.
No, and that's what I'm saying. I just think there are so many kids doing great work out there that have just, you know, we have so many really, really, really good kids in Norwalk that just, I think, do really great work. And so it's fun being at Lakewood because I think it brings back, they love, both sides feed off it, right? Gives the young kids something, yep, to aspire to, but it also gives the older kids, kind of takes them back to a day and it makes them like, oh, I remember how bad I wanted to, you know, do all this stuff. We had the bowlers there, like I said, this morning, and it was great to get to catch up with.
Well, just think about even you know, when people are looking up to you and think you're the coolest and the greatest, which is what little kids do for the high school kids, you know, give them, yeah, that sense of pride. And I don't know, it's just pretty awesome. Worm, you got anything positive?
Well, I concur with the Tim Clay comment. You know, speech was the number one thing that changed my life in high school. I went out for speech, mm-hmm, my junior and senior year and pretty much helped to, you know, kind of blend who I am today from a teaching standpoint in terms of how I, you know, act in the classroom and some of the mannerisms I have and those kind of things. So I tell everybody to go out for speech every year. Marlon Barillo used to always say that I was her biggest supporter. So she'd be like, you always tell the kids that, you know, go out for speech and drama, you know, kind of thing. So, and the kids were always like, what? I said, oh yeah, I'm a thespian. I said, you kids, you know? So in fact, I just went to a dinner theater down in Kansas City this last weekend. So that was fun.
I heard we had quite a performance at the, with show choir last weekend at the Fine Arts Center too. Kind of, yeah, some show.
The Nexus.
The Nexus.
Yeah, Nexus. You know who was one of the soloists? You guys will like to hear this. From Dowling Catholic High School. None other than Lewis Lynch. Another, oh, really? Name, all from, right, the past.
Awesome. Mike and Kelly.
And there you go.
I like it. Okay.
All sorts of good stuff going on.
Yes. Well, and that's part of the reason why we try to do that at the end, you know, in closing is share a little positive. And there's so many things. And I, as you mentioned before, sometimes that gets lost with things. So talked a little bit about Little Hawkeye Conference basketball championships and second place finishes, because people do, in fact, remember second place. And then all of the timeout stuff. And I don't know if people understand this. This is years in the making of having a full-blown conversation about it. Years. I don't know how long you two had been talking about it. Years. But when you approached me about it, it's been a long time. You know, and of course, Chris Weber in 1993. And then, you know, the feedback, high school sports, all of that. And then, of course, I would like to know, you know, if you've got any thoughts on the timeout piece. And then you have a desk, and it is opposite the entrance to the room that this desk is in, and you're sitting at it, which way are your pictures facing? I'd like to know that. And then, of course, as always, if you get any other feedback you want to give us, that's great. Any show ideas or episode ideas, you know, let us have that. And then any general feedback is good. Want to thank Steve Wormer-Skirkin and Chris Larson for joining us. Chris, you are now a two-time guest on the old Talk and the Walk pod. And we appreciate that, and appreciate you guys and your insight. This was episode 88, Chris Weber, Talk and the Walk. It is Thursday, February 9th, 2023. I am Paul Patterson signing off. Thanks for listening. This would be a good time for you guys to say goodnight too.
Thanks for having us on. Appreciate it.
Closing time. Thank you for listening to the Talk and the Walk podcast show. Yeah.